Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today's guest is Giovanni Twigg. He is the Chief HR Officer at IDEX Laboratories. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. You know, I got to tell you, I've heard you speak quite a bit in terms of at the HR Strategic Conference and at the Samerset, of course, the main HR convention. You've been in HR quite a long time. How many years have you been in it, and what have you seen as some of the, you know, the changes and challenges that are going on in HR today? A big topic, a lot of conversation.
So you really want to get this conversation starting by me revealing my age here, David?
Well, I didn't say reveal your age. I just said number of years in service.
Okay, so let's put it out there right now, right? It's 33 years in HR.
Okay, that's a short time for some.
Absolutely.
Yes. Now, I started. Because you started in HR when you were one.
Yeah, absolutely, because I'm from South Africa, and then it was legal to work at one.
Okay, we're going to talk about that later in the show. But so what are some of those trends? What are you seeing, the changes and everything that's going on today?
Right. So seriously, after school, I left in South Africa and started working, did my military service, and started working immediately in what was called then organization or work study, which is a lot of the foundation of HR, right? I did my degree at night, and it was a degree in personnel management. And 30 years ago, that was really very much the theme, right? Personnel administration,
yes.
Right? Just look at the governance, the compliance, and the administration of people in the workplace. So as I have evolved, you know, so has my career in the 33 years. I have been privileged to work in places like South Africa for top companies, in the Middle East, both in Kuwait after the Gulf War for 5 years, Saudi for two, worked in Chicago with responsibility for Latin America, had global responsibility, moved to Europe and Paris, right? So take that gleam off your face, right? Paris, it's an awesome place to work, right? So I have seen HR in different parts in the world and people within the workplace. HR has now taken a much, much more strategic role. We're gone from the days of administration and governance, right? Now, that's also where a little bit of my pet peeve lies, right? Business wants us to play a strategic partner, yet I still see some HR people stuck in the days of governance and administration, right? And want to apply the rule book to people within the workplace. With the demographic shifts, the millennial population, they just don't respond to that. It does not engage them. It does not motivate them. You have to work much, much more strategically around that workforce. So some of the changes that I've seen in my sort of 33 years.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And so I'm going to take you back for a little bit because I think it'd be interesting to the audience. You talked about a number of different countries that you've done HR in. Different rules, different policies, different procedures, different expectations. Of all those, the most challenging one was?
Now you're going to put me on the spot here.
Yes, I am.
Right? I would almost say Paris, France.
And why is that?
Rules. Over-regulated rules, right, that puts constraints on people to be truly entrepreneurial and innovative, right? And it's very interesting, Dave, if you look at some of the business studies that's being done, right, on entrepreneurship in the world, guess where you'll find the most, the biggest, largest group of French entrepreneurs?
No idea.
Actually in London.
Interesting.
Because they're so constrained with rules and regulations within France at this moment that they rather decide to leave and set up. And this is where the UK has been phenomenally strong, right? And they facilitating these groups. So there's a lot of young people, currently French young people, in the UK trying to start up new businesses and coming up with new ideas. So I would say that one. You probably would have thought by the look in your eyes that it was Kuwait.
Well, I thought it might be in one of the Middle Eastern countries, yes.
And here's why, refreshingly for me, it wasn't, right? So I worked in South Africa for a company called Anglo American, probably the mining finance house, the company to work for in South Africa, and I was the head of executive compensation at the tender age of 27. Right? And so at...
Five years ago.
Exactly. So at the age of 29, I got this phenomenal opportunity by a company in Kuwait that were looking for a compensation manager. And you would probably recall that that was the first televised war that we were watching,
correct,
right?
Yes.
And so my only recollection of where Kuwait is was this sort of dusty little patch of desert. And I said, absolutely no. The CEO and the CFO came out, interviewed, and I said, they said, just come and visit. And I slipped away for the weekend because they start their work week on a Saturday. And I spent my time over a two-day period interviewing, meeting with this local company, and was so impressed with what they did. And there was a huge need. So I went back and submitted my resignation. When I submitted my resignation, the executives were saying to me as well, go and get it out of your system and you know, come back when
yeah.
you're ready.
Exactly right.
Right,
yeah.
That was 94. I still haven't got it out of my system international, right? But what was so refreshing about the Middle East is human resources was a new concept in the Middle East back in 94. So there was no preconceived notions around what it is. And so coming in, you could help structure it and give it take shape. And I had probably five years in Kuwait and worked for a local company there with a group of multinationals where most of them spoke Arabic. And I had learned so much of my career. And you could see the hunger in those organizations for the sort of structure and logical approach to people within the workplace.
Yeah, it also makes sense that, of course, because it was still new, there weren't a lot of regulations yet, right? And there weren't a lot of policies and or governmental agencies overseeing everything yet,
right?
So you had really more of a entrepreneurial view of what you could do, and there wasn't a lot of, you know, rules and regulations to stop that, which...
Exactly.
Which... in some cases, thwarts the ability to be creative and innovative, which is some of the challenges we face today here in the U.S. in
yeah.
terms of, you know, the regulatory environment is, especially in the last few years, has continued to get more and more challenging. I think that's fair to say to every employer is complaining about it. And I don't see any let up of that, at least in the near future, where it comes to either exempt, non-exempt, or changes to compensation or requirements. It's really becoming an interesting times here in the U.S. It's getting more like Europe.
Yes.
Right? I mean, you've seen it.
Right.
And so talk a little bit about your European experience and what we can learn in the U.S. from that.
If you don't mind, I'm going to park that for a second. I
sure.
want to go back to a comment you've made on the Middle East, right? You said, sure. you know, it's an entrepreneurial, innovative company.
Yes,
right?
Sure.
Growing, getting the economy growing again globally, right, requires a lot of innovation. And there's a lot going on today, which is incredibly exciting to see. The one aspect that I loved working with people from different parts of the world in the Middle East was it brought diversity to play. I worked with people that came from Bangladesh with incredible limited experience to people that had graduated from Ivy League schools in the U.S., top schools in Europe. And they all came together with this diverse perspectives and background in this entrepreneurial and innovative way. So that's where I sort of saw innovation and the connection
life,
with diversity
right? yeah.
come to life
yeah.
and that connection yeah. coming to life. And I didn't want to miss that.
No, I think that's an important element of it. You know, as I've said, and which is why we're going to get into the regulatory challenges, is because I do think the only way we're going to solve some of the HR challenges that are out there today is through innovation. I think we have to be allowed to do that, though. And that's right. Part of the challenge is that because of the more constraints that are being forced on employers in terms of what they can and can't do, it really is crippling that effort, even though we are getting more innovative of how to get around the regulations. But that's not innovation. That's just innovation to adapt, not necessarily to make the necessary changes.
Right. Now, some of the regulations are incredibly important, right?
Oh, of course.
There
you have to have
to
some.
Protect work,
of course.
To protect the workers,
of course.
Right?
Of course.
And right there is an opportunity for HR to step in, right, is to partner with the regulators, right, and to help structure regulations that would advance the opportunities for employees within the workplace rather than constrain it. But I think, and for me, we see this sort of like them and us. And I think we can do a much better job by bringing the two together in constructive dialogue, right? So you say we hate these regulations that's been done on us. Well, you know, why don't we participate in their construction? And then that construction would probably more suit the agenda of having employees within the workplace engaged in innovation, entrepreneurship, and advancing the economy.
Yeah, I do think it is about being more participatory in the process. I think that, and maybe this is just something of an observation from my part, I do think that HR is a little more passive as an overall group.
Yes.
Rather than, and I think, I say that because I think that they're a little more scared to do things wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Would you agree with that statement?
Absolutely.
And they're not risk, you know, they're risk averse. The lawyers are telling them, you know, wait, don't do this, don't do that, be very careful. And so I think that there's less of an opportunity for them to rebel rouse and to, you know, to get in somebody's challenge and to really show that. I mean, are you seeing the same thing? That's my perception, at least.
You hitting one of my pet peeves, right? You're pushing a button here, and I've seen this, and I'm passionate about the HR profession, right? I chose to be in this profession, and I had opportunities with my prior employer, Abbott Labs, to actually go into the commercial, and I chose to stay within HR because I'm passionate about it, right? So I don't want to sound critical, but there are people within HR that loves to take the spectator seat. They love to comment versus participate in this sport. And this, frankly, is a participatory sport, right? Mm-hmm. You see so many HR people with concepts. You know, I go around, I talk to HR people, and some of them have concepts of HR. Versus my question always to them is, have you actually taken this up? Have you seen the results? Have you changed? And even if you haven't, and you've been going at this for 2-3 years, give up. Try something differently. Because it's not productive to you, nor the employer, nor the employee, by keep commenting on a specific, you know, topic from the side angle without jumping in and doing something about it. And I'm all about jumping in and doing something about it. You know, the Sheryl Sandberg concept of lean in.
Mm-hmm.
And all HR, you know, you often hear, if only we had a seat at the table. And for me, it is not about getting invited to take a seat at the table. It's about leaning in, earning that seat at the table.
Right.
You know, there is a Steve Jobs, another famous saying of Steve Jobs was, you know, everybody that's in a meeting with Steve Jobs needed to be there for a reason. And if he wasn't sure that you were contributing to that meeting, he would actually kick you out, right? Not a very nice way, but he would kick you out on the basis of, what's your contribution here? We don't want spectators. We want co-creators.
I think it's, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that, especially in the last couple of years, and it could be an economic reason, that you've seen HR a little bit being pushed back to the finance role underneath a CFO, And we're seeing that across the nation in terms of a little bit of a pushback. And I believe part of that is because they aren't aggressive enoughly pushing forward. They're just accepting it and moving back. Do you have any advice for new HR leaders in terms of how to do that tactfully? And you know what? We're going to talk about that in the next segment, okay? So I'm going to give you a second to think about it during the break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB. We're talking with Giovanni Twigg, Chief HR Officer at IDX Laboratories, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com. And today we're talking with Giovanni Twigg. He is the Chief HR Officer at IDX Laboratories, and just an all-around nice guy, right? Even though he's from South Africa, but we won't hold it against him, okay?
Could have been Italian.
Could have been Italian. I'm Italian, but I'm a little whopped. No, I know, that's not a good joke. I know. But I'm on the air, I'm the host, I can say those sort of things. All right, so we're talking about HR professionals that are really trying to learn how to get that seat at the table, how to push back when they're getting underneath the CFO, under the finance department, as the push is happening, because maybe financial reasons at a company. Maybe the CEO doesn't necessarily see HR as being the strategic person. How do they push back on that? Really, I mean, you've seen it. You've been in the trenches. I'm not talking about the theory behind it, but the actual. How does that happen,
David? There's a lot of very very great examples of HR people who is contributing a lot to the business, right, and whose value. They've demonstrated their value to the business, and they are appreciated by their business leaders, right? So I don't want to give the impression that there is not, right? There's a ton out there. So for a new person coming into this profession, is the first thing you need to do is seek out those examples, seek out those models, right? That's where you're going to get your nuggets. That's where you're going to see how they are doing that, right? And for me, it really boils down, and this is what I've seen over and over again, that separates the successful HR people from the ones who's having a little bit more of a struggle. And those are ones that listens. They don't hesitate to sit down with a business leader and listen to what this business leader is trying to do. And then as they listen, they tease out, because they listen with the lens of people. And as they listen to this business leader's business model, its strategy, just some of the basic struggles they have in business, they get the clues for how people within that business leader's organization can actually help solve some of these problems. And then as they slowly become the advisor and the coach, and the business leaders take action on it, and it actually works out and helps the business leader to execute on their strategy, on their initiatives, and that business leaders come back for more. And then that is where this sort of great bond between a business partner that adds value and a business leader is conducted. Where I've seen it not going so well is where a HR person, before they even have listened, throw out the roadblocks. This is what you can and not do, cannot do, cannot do. That's sort of like a stuck a phrase that I hear often, and that's where I hear business leaders that come to me and says, look, you know, I just don't form a relationship with this business HR person, right? I need a person that's going to help problem solve versus telling me what I cannot do. Then why would I need this business person?
You know, it's interesting. And you probably saw it at the last HR big conference here in Maine. As I was looking across the audience, I was standing with a couple of senior HR leaders in the state. And I'm looking across the room, and I'm thinking to myself, either I'm getting really old, or we're all getting really young in this audience. But there were a lot of new leaders. It seems that, and we know this is true, millennials have certainly taken over in terms of the HR and in terms of just work in general, right? They're now right. The largest group in terms of overall workers
right.
in the workforce. That comes with its own challenges. That comes with its own unique set of differences. And they have a perception of different things, the way they should be is their way, or maybe the company isn't doing it their way. Do you see HR as the conduit to that solution, to that challenge? And if you do, what are some tips that you think are good for HR professionals to think about when they're dealing with that? Because I know you're going to deal with it at IDEX in the next few years, that they're going to take over your workforce.
Well, just the IDEX statistics, you know, sort of national statistic, and this is research that was done a couple of years ago for the book Workplace 2020 by Jeannie Meister. They predicted that the U.S. workforce will be 50% millennials by the year 2020. When we looked at the demographics for IDEX, we'll reach that tipping point by mid-2017. Right? So, you know, it's not a lot of time.
It really
to
isn't.
Make those changes within the organization that capitalizes on the wants and needs of this population. It's not as if one has to wait for July 2017 in our case and then start flipping the switches. It's too late, right? And we're seeing it in our workplace, so we're making those adjustments. And we do what I believe every HR person should do, is have a customer orientation by seeing employees within the workplace as customers, and therefore build the voice of the customer into what you need to do. The millennials is one strong population group, but we shouldn't forget about the other four generations that's in the workplace as well. Now, here's an interesting phenomena. What I love about the millennials is no matter what you say, they're incredibly authentic, right? You get it. With no politics,
nope,
you get it straightforward,
yep.
You have it right out there, and that, I love that authenticity. And I've seen some of the other generations, like the baby boomers, who's still in the workplace, right, and who will be with us for much longer for certain economic reasons.
Right.
Love that. Secretly love this new authenticity, and they adopt some of those characteristics. And now you have some of this confusion that's happening, right? You cannot take a generation that says, because you're born before a certain day,
right.
you're a millennial, and
right.
therefore you act and stereotype you like this, right?
That's right.
Because
that's so
I have seen baby boomers that act more millennial than some
millennials. Yes, that's
and
right.
I've seen some millennials, right? Like as an example, I'm just going to throw this example out there. An intern, 19 years old, insist to work in a suit and tie. It's almost like a baby boomer, right?
Right.
Whereas,
right.
you know, I work in jeans every day. I love that part of the millennials, right?
Yeah.
So for me, advice to HR is listen to the voice of the employees, right? Solicit that and adjust to that. See them as a customer and be responsive, just like the business would view their external customers. It makes a world of difference.
The other thing that, and I know it's been talked about for years, is understanding the business itself, the financials, understanding the ROI of HR.
Yep.
There is an ROI to HR. It's how you define it, and it's how you make sure that senior leadership understand it, that sometimes is a challenge for even good HR people.
Right.
Right? So some thoughts on that topic of how to really have the C-suite understand when maybe they don't, your value.
To put a tangible ROI on all of HR is difficult. I'm not going to pretend that it's not difficult. And I would say, don't attempt to put an ROI on your whole HR department, because you're going to lose the argument, right? Because it becomes so soft, right, that the business leaders don't buy into it. So I see ROI as you've got to break it down in its components, right? Now, I'm going to take our own example, IDEX, right? So 5 years ago, when I got into the organization, the business strategy was one of accelerated growth. Now, logic will say, where's that growth going to come from? We have great, solid business strategies around those. Who's going to make it happen? People are going to make it happen. And so there was this incredible need to accelerate the number of people that we've got in the organization. So over this five-year period, we've grown over 40%. We've gone from 4,500 employees globally to over almost 8,000 employees, if you include the expanded workforce,
sure,
which is something we need to talk about,
yes,
right? Because that is an upcoming trend.
Absolutely.
So right there is a need for the business add people on. So what we did from an HR perspective is, okay, let's look at our own processes. How do we get people into the organization? Well, we didn't have very good recruitment practices. Most of it came through agencies. Now, right there is facts and data. How much does it cost you for a person that you get through an agency? And you can start calculating that. And then we calculated what it would take if we built that recruitment function inside the company. And we made the case that it would be much more cost beneficial for IDEX if we built an internal recruitment function and built that out. So right there was your ROI. Not for HR, but for the business. And in IDEX's case, every year when it comes to budget time, and I have to defend the budget for the talent acquisition department, we look at the number of people recruited from the outside. We make a couple of basic assumptions on what that is. And so far, year over year, over the last 4 years, we have been able to avoid over $3 million of spend that the business would have spent on acquisition, talent acquisition, had they gone outside. Now, right there lies your ROI. Your finance guys validate it. In fact, we have them help us to construct and then challenge the assumptions we make. And right there, it's $3 million that's now dropping to the bottom line of IDEX. That's the net savings, right? After I've paid for all of the talent acquisition, their systems, the people, the benefits within talent acquisition. And that's an easier one to do. All of HR.
Very hard.
Works very hard.
Well, I think to your point, it is about taking a tangible, measurable area and taking that small piece and showing the value of the piece.
Right.
Right. And building off that.
Right.
Right. And then and extrapolating and moving away across the HR function in terms of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And some of those are more fuzzy, like, for example, development, people development, right? A little bit more fuzzy. But I've seen this over and over again. If you can prove were the ones that you can measure, you get credibility to do the others.
No question.
I'll give you another example, right? Very tangible, a little bit more tricky. There's a lot of variables that plays in here. But top of mind for all of the U.S., cost of healthcare.
Oh, no question.
Right?
Right.
In our case, we've got about 93% of all eligible employees participating in our health plan. We're self-insured, meaning the cost of healthcare drops directly to the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
The company has a strategy to accelerate operating profit. So this works counter. Any increases in cost on healthcare drops to the bottom line, so it works counter this business strategy that we have. With a cost of the growth of health cost of healthcare between 8 to 12%, you can absolutely see that goes totally against where the business wants to go. So the business is simply going to turn around if I come with a budget that shows an 8 to 12% growth that says, no, you've got to cut it.
Right.
Well, and where do I do it? Pretty easy to cut. I can cut the benefits,
right,
raise copays,
yep,
raise premiums,
yep,
Very easy.
All of the above. That's the standard answer, by the way.
Not sustainable.
Correct.
Right?
Right.
Because what we need to do then in the end, because it becomes, makes ourselves not very competitive, because when an employee comes in and wants to see what we provide at what cost, they'll say, well, I'm sorry, this is not what I can get from another company. Right. So what do? We increase the base salaries, or we pay them some hiring bonuses, sign-on bonuses. So not the way to do it. So we tackled that head-on with a comprehensive wellness strategy.
And I've been to your IDEX Labs. It's beautiful over there. You have an incredible wellness department.
It's phenomenal. It's not just the facility itself. It's all the programs.
Oh, it's the programs.
Right?
It's everything. I'm talking about the whole strategy behind it is amazing.
So with us, we've got over 4,000 people in our plan. Cost overall, it's about $43 million. Lots of spend. Now, what do you think has been the compounded growth per capita on the cost of healthcare over the last 5 years with 2010 as a baseline?
5%.
1.8%. That's been the growth.
It's phenomenal.
No, but it's not phenomenal if I cut premiums or if I increase premiums, right?
You're absolutely right.
So it's got to be a win for the company. It's got to be a win for the employee.
Right.
Employee's premiums, if I take just a single employee's premium, have not been nearly at the same rate as it was back in 2010. It has been below that consistently. Now, that is for the employee who takes advantage of our healthy behavior discounts, right?
Right.
And over 73% of them do participate in that. That's not all. It's like, I feel like a TV commercial, right?
And there's more!
Yeah. And wait, there's more, right?
There's more.
Because what we've also been able to do with controlling the cost is where the business is saying, well, 1.8 is phenomenal, right? But I don't need all of this. And we have a strategic target to sort of make sure that the cost does not grow beyond 4.5% a year. So we've taken that additional and invested in a number array of other benefits. For example, in the beginning of this year, we were able to increase the company's match to 401k. Mm-hmm. So we've not only kept premiums low, we've increased benefits, and we've maintained the growth of cost on something that's incredible variable. So right there, now you get the attention of the CFO
finance. That's right.
And they say, well, if you can do this with talent acquisition, and we need to get people into the business always as HR. If you can do this with wellness, the cost of healthcare, right? Boy, you know what? I'm going to give you the benefit on the area that's a little bit more tricky. So whatever investments you need for leadership development or development, you know, go for it. Because I believe that you're going to take that same approach to this, right? And understand it's a little bit more tricky to show the ROI there. So just two examples of how you can
do
it.
And they're great examples. And they really do show that no matter the size of the organization, I'm going to talk about that when we get back from our break here, there are solutions to the problem. We're talking with Giovanni Twigg, the Chief HR Officer at IDEX Laboratories. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're having a great discussion today with Giovanni Twigg, the Chief HR Officer for IDEX Laboratories. We're talking about HR's role in the business. Good conversation. I like it. It's all good stuff, you know, because you're giving real-life examples as to what's really happening out there. One of the things we said we wanted to talk about and get back to was the expanded workforce. We've talked a little about millennials. We're talking a little bit about that. Tell me about your take on what that means and where you see that going in the next few years.
It actually ties two concepts together, right? With the emergence of the millennials in the workplace and their wants and needs, not wanting to work sort of in this, I commit for a life and a career with you. Give me interesting work. And as long as they're interesting and I'm motivated and excited and I can see that this interesting work is connected to a higher purpose, right? I want to identify with the purpose of what you're doing, then I'll do it. That could be 6 months, that could be a year, and they want that variety. And so that same sort of dynamic that drives that wants and needs, we now see that manifesting itself into people wanting to present themselves more often as independent contractors, independent consultants, and they don't want the constraints of a traditional employee-employee relationship, right? And we have, you know, out of our 8,200 employees, we've got about 1,000 people that falls into that category, and they are everybody from interns, and don't forget, interns needs to be paid. There's a construct because they do work for you. It's not as they are just gophers in the old days or hang around, right? They are actually demanding to take actual work and do work, and therefore they get paid. So they are part of your expanded workforce. They're getting work done for you.
Well, I also say that interns are your best people that go out there and talk about your organization. They're your ambassadors.
They are.
They really are.
Right. And talk about the change for a second here. Let me get off topic here. And talk about a change of technology, right? The rapid change in technology. This is just another language for them. Sometimes I think it's a first language and English is a second language, right?
There's truth to that, yes.
So what they bring in when they come in and tackle a project, they bring that language and skill into the workplace. And they can do things so much different because they just don't know how not to leverage technology.
That's right.
And that helps with a paradigm change within the organization, showing everybody else that there is different ways of getting things done. So, and then they teach, right? There is that reverse mentoring happening.
Absolutely.
So, but interns are one. Independent consultants, independent contractors, sometimes seasonal temps are them. So we see them all as people who do work for IDEX. And if we look at them as such, we have to understand, how do I keep them engaged? How do I make them feel that they are part of this larger family who does work for IDEX and get them connected with a higher purpose? Because if a company down the road has another exciting project and presents that to this independent contractor, I want this contractor to think twice. What is the value that I get? Am I sort of included or am I excluded? Am I always looked upon as sort of the stepchild here? Or do you value what I bring? Because I bet if you go into an organization and you walk into the workforce, you'll be challenged to point out who's full-time, part-time, and who's expanded. And
it's
therefore, they are part of that workforce, right?
That's
and we
right.
need to understand them better. Now, I totally get it that there are some boundaries, legal boundaries, that you have to honor, right? And we do that. But it's this sort of, you made a point earlier on, is it's about being innovative and finding that right solution. For example, once we did the strat plan update for HR last year, and we saw the numbers, and we saw... And we dig a little bit deeper, and we saw that almost all of them was hired through procurement, didn't even came through HR, that we said, we got to make a change here. And so now today, almost 50% of those get hired through the HR organization, through a talent acquisition organization. So therefore, they participate in very similar processes, hiring processes that shows them value, understanding their skills and benefits. And the beginning of this year, we also included them in our annual engagement survey. We did a separate survey for them so that we can better understand what makes them tick. And we pretty much at the leading front, you'll see that's a trend that's coming up and looking at expanded workforce as a critical group that does work for us. We actually changed our HR vision. Instead of saying we want highly engaged employees, we moved away from the definition of employees. We are now saying, you know, we want to enable meaningful and engaging experiences for people who do work for IDEX. So gone is this label of employee, right? And who do work for IDEX through innovative people practices. So each one of those words in our vision statement has a call to action in terms of how we deliver as HR and what we do.
Well, it is a mind shift. It's a mind shift of what HR thinks an employee is to what it currently is today. And that's going to take a little time, right? That's not something that somebody just flips a switch in their head and goes, oh, that's the new way of thinking.
Right.
It is going to take time. It's going to take education. And I certainly know that that's going to be a 2, 3, 5 year process, maybe 10 year process before it really goes through. But I think it is going to slowly, well, no question it's happening.
Right. So we were there was a couple of aha moments when we got the survey results back, right? So we have pretty high engagement with our full-time, part-time employees, right? And we measure ourselves against the very select benchmark of high-tech companies because our vision is to be a great company, and a great is not average. Great is, you know, we define it as above the 75th percentile. So we have great participation, engagement, and participation in our annual engagement survey from full-time, part-time employees. The expanded workforce engagement was actually higher than the full-time, part-time employees.
Interesting.
Now, why? We're still digging into that one. One of the hypotheses is they are not constrained with the bureaucratic processes and procedures that we sometimes subject a full-time employee to, right? The other aha for us was, wow, we've got 1,000 people out there that does work for IDEX with a very high level of engagement. And to the point you made earlier on, was exactly our discovery. These could be ambassadors for us.
Right.
They could be out there singing the praises of IDEX.
Mm-hmm.
And we know today, you know, one of the best ways of there's plenty of research out there, one of the still one of the best ways to get talent into the organization is through referrals.
No question.
So
still
here's
the best way.
Here's 1,000 voices that could be acting as a referral. They just need to be activated. And by not including them in terms of how we do things, we're certainly not activating them. So
no.
We're sitting there with a great opportunity.
Right. I wanted to shift the conversation for a second now to one-person HR departments, which are the majority out there in the world today. I mean, let's be honest,
right.
The small business drives the engines of America. They're potentially listening today and thinking to themselves, well, Gio, that's great. Sounds wonderful. But you have a team of X that can get that done.
Right.
I'm just alone here, my little desk, doing my little thing.
Right.
And, you know, my boss thinks I'm important, but I don't really know how to get through. I mean, I got so much to do. What do you say to those individuals of how they still make HR push forward and get some of this innovation done?
So first I will have to say that IDEX, 30 years old, very successful company, the largest publicly traded company in Maine, incredible innovative, leading in our industry, started up on the waterfront of Portland, Maine, as a small, I don't think David Shaw even had an HR person when they started off.
I don't think so. I think in the history, you're right. I don't think they did, right? Yeah, I don't think
And then they started adding an HR person on.
Yep.
So we were there where you say a lot of companies are. So the first thing I would say is think of what you can be, not with what you have. And then the other part is you might think that because we're a big organization, we have large HR group, we apply the same kind of logics to the HR organization that I would recommend a small group would do. Prioritize. Focus on the must-dos, not the nice-do. And the must-dos, take your cue from that entrepreneur, that business leader, right? What are the one single most thing about people that's going to help them do their business better and grow their business? And you know what? Put 120% of your energy into that one. Yes, some of the other things are not going to get done. You know, 5 years ago when I came to the organization, there was a lot of things, right? You know, the list of stuff we needed to do as a growing organization was a lot, right? And everybody, every business leader had something to do. And we said, look, you know, and this is a quote from our prior chief scientific officer that says, look, 10 things half done is nothing done.
So true.
And so even for us, we needed, as a larger organization, needed to focus. And we focused on three things. And that's sometimes a hard thing that you have to do as a leader, to say, look, I understand that these other things need to be done. But if I don't get these three things done exemplary, these others are not going to matter. And so, you know, prioritize.
I think that's a very important statement, because when you are a department of one, you can get tugged in a lot of different directions by that organization. And it's about, again, being able to push back and say, what are the priorities here today? And showing your leadership by doing that, rather than just saying, yep, get it done, yep, get it done, yep, get it done, and really making a difference. That's how you start, right at the beginning, and pushing back and really setting the stage and running your department, no matter how you run it in terms of your day-to-day operations.
I'll give you a life example, right? Within our own HR organization, I would not rate our recognition system as very good. Tons of data out there. And we have some great systems out there today. And a group has come together and sort of this is what they want to do. But the implementation of that recognition system is going to take up capacity from the HR organization. It's going to take up capacity from the organization. And it's going to defocus them and it's going to overload some people. So I made quite a few people unhappy by saying, no, we're not doing it, because it's going to take us our eyes off the ball, right? So that's just, you know, we battle with those same challenges.
Every size organization does that, small or large. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. Today we're talking with Giovanni Twigg, the Chief HR Officer at IDEX Laboratories, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLLB and presented by CMAcareer.com. We've had a great conversation today with Giovanni Twigg, the Chief HR Officer at IDEX Laboratories. We've talked about a lot today about HR's role in the business. He shared with us some HR pet peeves. We talked about, you know, why HR needs to innovate and why we're thinking about how things are going to be different in the next few years. You've traveled the globe. You've been in a lot of different areas doing HR. You shared some of the stories with us. You're now in Maine. You've been in Maine now how long?
5 years.
5 years. And while you're not a true Mainer, because, you know, true Mainers are born here, quote unquote, for all you true Mainers out there chuckling to yourselves, tell me about where you see Maine today, where you see, you know, IDEX playing in this and your HR role. Wrap it all up for us today.
I'm going to confess, when I was approached by a headhunter for this role, right, I looked up in Google Portland, And I said, look at these amazing houses, like very creative, great houses and stuff. And only to figure out that was Portland, Oregon, right? And I had to sort of reorientate myself to Maine, right? Now, 5 years ago, it was a phenomenal change for me in my life. Not only did I change cities from Chicago to here, I also became an American citizen 5 years ago.
Excellent.
And I felt totally in love with what Maine has to offer. And I been telling many, many people that I think Mainers is keeping this a secret. They don't want a secret to get out, right? Because there is such a huge value proposition to work and live in Maine, right? The entrepreneurship that's happening here. Mm-hmm. You know, people say there's a lot of companies that's small. But without it starting somewhere small, it's never going to get big.
That's right.
And there's a lot of freedom of that to operate. And then the environment, right? There's the outdoors, the school systems, the healthiness of the state. There's so many things that you can weave into an employee value proposition that I love, right? So I have thoroughly enjoyed the last 5 years. And yes, I'm not a Mainer. But I've been practicing very hard on some of my accents, like Bahaba, you know. So, but still, they see through this whole thing, right? So I think it is something that we need to promote and attract. Certainly, when we've done that as part of our talent acquisition efforts, it has paid off. You know, we have to find the niche for us in our recruitment when we cannot find the talent within the state. There are some specific jobs that is limited in supply within the state, and we have to go out of state for it. We, time and time, there's a common threat. If we can find somebody that has got those skills and they have some tie back to the state, whether that was attending a camp as a kid, whether that has a wife that is from the state or a husband that's from the state, well, family members here, it pulls them back into it. They say yes. I mean, I'll give you an example. We've recently found a 27-year-old Intel career, and his connection back to Maine was that he has a camp here he comes and have summers.
Yep.
And when he heard about us, he didn't know about us. When he heard about us, he says, I love that place. That's where I spend my summers. I have a camp there.
Sure.
And after 27 years with Intel, I'm ready to make a career change, and Maine is where I want to be. And we hooked him in. And that's sort of the niche within our talent acquisition strategy, is if we can find them and they have some tie back to Maine, they get it. They get why you and I love living here.
It's no question. You know, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. This has been a lot of great information. Hope everybody was listening carefully for HR role in the business that you're in. Gio, thank you for being a guest today.
It was my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.